Wings above the Diamantina. A human story from Northwest Queensland. Napoleon Bonaparte, the half-caste detective, now has a number of clues to work upon in the mystery of the abandoned aeroplane. Mr. Cartwright, the fire insurance assessor, told him that the aeroplane had been destroyed by nitroglycerin. Now, Boney has disappeared on a walkabout, and Sergeant Cox and the Coolabah household are growing anxious about him. As the Nettlefolds, Dr. Knowles and Dr. Stanisforth, the specialist from Brisbane, entered the dining room for lunch, Boney appeared through the veranda window and sent Hetty to ask for Mr. Nettlefold.
Well, I'm blessed. It's Boney.
How are you, Mr. Nettlefold?
Fine, thanks. Hetty just told me you'd arrived. Come on in to lunch.
Would you please be good enough to overlook my appearance? I am afraid I am not very presentable.
Why, of course.
Then with your permission, I shall close the door. My clothes, I'm afraid, are in a said condition.
Where on earth have you been, Boney?
On a quiet walkabout. Sandstorms, wind, sleeping in the open, and rain have not improved my appearance.
Can I give you something to drink?
I should be very grateful. A glass of soda water with just a dash of brandy, please.
Oh, doesn't sound very attractive. Yeah, well, here you are.
Thank you.
Where did you spring from just now?
I came in from the veranda. Noticing you had visitors, I waited until they had gone out of the room. Could I trespass on your kindness still further by asking you to smuggle me to a bedroom?
Yes, of course. Your room is ready for you now. But where have you been? Sergeant Cox has been ringing up for you every day. We've been most concerned.
I will tell you later on. I have discovered several valuable clues, and I am confident of solving the mystery within the next few days. How is the young lady?
No change in her, I'm afraid. Knowles has just brought a specialist from the city, Dr. Stanisforth. They're going to see her after lunch.
Good. Now, could you strain your resources still further by putting up another guest?
Why, certainly.
Then would you mind ringing up Sergeant Cox and asking him to stay the night? Do not say I have returned. Just say that you have had word from me.
Very well.
Now, I will go upstairs, change my clothes, and join you at lunch. Believe me, Mr. Nettlefold, I feel a good deal better for that lunch. It was very pleasant to sit down in an easy chair again.
Make yourself at home, Boney. You want to take it easy for a while.
I would like to take this opportunity, whilst the medical fraternity are upstairs with the patient, of having a quiet talk with you. I find that my body is less tough and supple than it used to be. I have been walking and sitting on my heels a great deal since I left you, and sleeping on the ground at night.
Good for you, Boney. When I was young, I used to glory in camping out. You know the sort of thing, sleeping on a waterproof sheet under a single blanket with your head in a saddle. But now I'm afraid I look for a down mattress and sheets and feather pillows.
Yes, that is so. Since the medical fraternity are upstairs looking at the patient, I would like to have a quiet talk with you, Mr. Nettlefold.
Go ahead. Did you do any good out back?
Yes and no. First, tell me how things have gone here.
Pretty well according to routine. I've made Elizabeth cut down her hours. She was doing too much, you know. Ted Sharp still stays on the veranda outside the sick room at night. I doubt very much, though, that fellow, whoever he was, will make another attempt on the girl's life.
What makes you think that?
Well, it's rather hard to say in so many words. It's just my idea, that's all.
I don't think it is improbable. We cannot expose the girl to any more risks, or Miss Elizabeth, for that matter. How many men do you employ?
14.
What men are there besides the stockman?
There's a men's cook, a groom, a Chinese gardener, and a blacksmith.
How many of them are about the homestead as a rule?
2, including the gardener.
Are there any new hands?
No, the last to be engaged was the blacksmith. He's been here a year.
How long has Ted Sharp been with you?
11 years.
Indeed, where did he come from?
Candidly, I don't know. I've never asked him.
You never asked him where he came from?
No, we don't ask questions like that in the bush.
I am aware of that, but has he never volunteered any information?
No.
Is he a good man?
Excellent in every way. He's a good man's boss and a good boss's man. We all like him very much.
Yes, I know that. Does he know anything about sheep?
I don't think so.
Do you know anything about them?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. I once spent 5 years as a sheep station as a jackaroo. A good many years ago now, though.
Oh, is that so? Mr. Nettlefold, I need your assistance, and to obtain it, I must confide in you. I do not like confiding in people until I have my case complete, but there is no help for it. I must be especially cautious here, because I am convinced that certain people command an excellent intelligence service.
Really? I assure you anything you tell me, Boney, is in the strictest confidence.
Thank you. I have established the fact that Loveacre's monoplane was destroyed by human agency, by a man, in fact, who walked from the main Golden Dawn Road at a point some miles beyond Gurner's Hotel, and then walked back again through the same road.
Is that a fact?
It proves something else to me as well. I am certain that more than one person is concerned in this case. There is the man who stole and piloted the aeroplane, and there is the man who poisoned the brandy.
How do you get that, Boney?
The firing of the machine and the poisoning of the brandy happened too soon after one another for one man to have done both.
I still can't understand the reason for burning the aeroplane.
It was done, I think, with the idea of destroying the man's fingerprints. Now, that man, Mr. Nettlefold, did his work wearing sheepskin boots, having wool on the outside.
How on earth did you discover that? We couldn't find any tracks.
I didn't actually see any tracks either, but I found two wool fibers in the sand. I understand you have never had any sheep on Emu Lake?
Good Lord, no.
Then I have decided those fibers came off a pair of sheepskin boots. Have there ever been any sheep on Coolabah?
Never.
There are, I believe, some on Tintaroo.
Yes, John Cape Cain keeps a few mutton sheep.
What class of sheep are they, do you know?
Yes, they're border Leicesters crossed with Merinos.
Does he breed them or buy them elsewhere?
I'm not sure. I think he buys them from a Larry Downs. The Graysons run the same breed. But Cain, of course, isn't the only man who buys sheep from them.
No, I suppose not. Anyone else in this district?
Yes, the Olivers of Windy Creek, so does the Golden Dawn Butcher. You see, in this district we're cattle people, but some of us run a few sheep to give us a change from this eternal beef. I don't keep any because my fences aren't sheep-proof.
That will widen the search, I'm afraid. Have a look at this wool, Mr. Nettlefold. Does it look as if it came off the type of sheep you just mentioned?
Yes. Yes, that looks like Leicester to me. Do you know, Boney, if that man walked through the bush from the main road and back, he must know this country as well as I do. A stranger would get lost.
That is exactly what I think. He knew it so well that he could fly an aeroplane over it at night. Well enough, too, to jump by parachute when he was over fairly clear country.
Yes, he wouldn't have been able to follow the road in the dark. There was no moon that night.
Nor could he have picked out a single landmark. It was truly remarkable flying.
I don't know so much about the landmarks. Halfway between here and Tintaroo Homestead, there's a long sheet of water in one of the river channels.
Is there indeed?
Yes. Once he picked that out, he could easily set his course for Bore 14, which, as I expect you know, is a bore north of Emu Lake on Tintaroo Country.
By Jove, you are right, Mr. Nettlefold. I have seen Bore 14. It is almost like a small lake.
Yes, an excellent landmark from the air.
You have hit on something there, Mr. Nettlefold. I can see daylight now.
I'm glad to be of some little help.
Of course, there are not many people who would know the country as well as that. You cannot fly an aeroplane, can you?
No, I certainly can't.
Who else would there be?
Let me see. There's Ted Sharp, Ned Hamlin, John Cain, Dr. Knowles, young Owen Oliver, and of course all the other stockmen.
We are progressing fast now. The list of suspects is being considerably shortened.
Have you anyone particularly in mind?
I would not like to say just yet. But if I could obtain definite proof that the pilot was guided by that water, I should be even more optimistic.
Hello, Ted. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Elizabeth. It's a funny thing, you know, how seldom I see you, considering we're in the same house most of the time.
Yes. There always seems to be so much to do.
I wish to goodness I'd get this aeroplane business settled once and for all.
Bonaparte's doing his best.
But he's very slow about it.
It's no easy job. I think he's doing very well.
You've changed your mind then since I saw you last.
Changed my mind?
Yes. I thought you didn't like the fellow.
Oh, no, I didn't at first. I've grown to know him better now. He's a very clever man, Ted.
He asks the most damned awkward questions.
That's his job.
Still, there's no need for him to pry into my private affairs.
Surely you've nothing to hide, have you?
No, of course not.
Then what are you grousing at?
Oh, just the sort of things he asks me.
Tell me.
No, I won't say any more about them. Just yet.
Secrets?
Yes, for a while, anyway.
You don't like Boney because of his colour. That's it, isn't it?
Rubbish, Elizabeth. It's nothing of the sort.
Are you sure?
Quite.
Can't see any reason why he should be treated differently from a white man. just because he's a half-caste.
That's not the point.
What is the point, then?
The point is that he will insist on prying into affairs which don't concern him.
You're such a secretive blighter. You know, you've always given me the impression that you're hiding something. I may be quite wrong.
You are, Elizabeth. But I propose to tell you everything later on. Do you think he suspects me?
Bernie? I'm sure I don't know. He never gives much away.
No, he doesn't. But I don't want you to lose faith in me, Elizabeth.
I won't, Ted.
You're all I have to live for, my dear.
Please, Ted.
Oh, Elizabeth, my dear. Are you busy for a while?
Why?
I'd like you to come outside. There's so much I want to tell you.
Oh, I can't now, Ted. I've got to go in and see the men in the lounge. I'm very anxious to hear what Dr. Stanisforth has to say, too.
All right.
Come and see me later, Ted. What do you think of the girl, Dr. Stanisforth?
I'll be candid with you, Miss Elizabeth. Unless we find the person who caused this paralysis and make him tell us what caused it, I'm afraid we cannot save her.
You are sure, Dr. Stanisforth, her condition is not due to brain injury or physical violence?
Quite sure.
Then it was not caused by shock when the aeroplane made its forced landing?
Definitely no. I am of the opinion it was caused by a drug.
Yes, Dr. Noel said that too. Have you any idea what drug it might be?
No, but there are several which could have produced such an effect, temporarily. The venom of certain snakes, for instance. But I don't know of any drug which could have such a permanent effect.
How do you think the drug was administered?
Dr. Knowles and I both think it was given through the mouth, probably with food or drink. But one thing we are positive about is that, unless we can find the right antidote very soon, she must die.
But surely, Dr. Stanisforth, there must be some way of saving her.
Her pulse is weak and growing weaker. The cause, of course, is the wastage of her tissues. She cannot take any normal nourishment.
If an antidote cannot be found, how long do you think it will be?
That's a difficult question, Mr. Bonaparte. I can only make a guess. I should say about 6 or 7 weeks. Certainly not longer than 2 months.
But that's terrible.
I suppose it's a case of foul play, Mr. Bonaparte.
I am convinced of it. Please excuse my presumption, but might the patient react to hypnotism?
No, I've tried that.
When you hypnotize a person, you gain control of his mind, don't you?
Yes.
But you cannot project your mind into that of your subject.
No.
Nor can you see into the subject's mind, read it as it were.
No. In an ordinary case, I might be able to command any subject to reveal what was in his mind, make him speak it or write it down. But in this case, that is out of the question. Why are you smiling, Mr. Bonaparte?
You have given me an idea, Dr. Stanisforth. I think I know how I could find out what is in this girl's mind.
Really? I don't quite see how.
I am afraid I cannot explain just now. I cannot guarantee success either, but I think there is an excellent chance.
Well, surely you can give me some idea.
The girl, of course, would not know what the drug was. She might not even know that she is drugged, but she does know who took her up in that aeroplane and left her to crash in it. Once I know who that man is, I can get him to tell me what was the drug he used.
Yes. If he chooses to tell you.
He will tell me, I assure you.